This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing, the podcast brought to you by Peter Higgins at Conkers 3 and Peter Wheelie Dealer at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. Now, this is a new one for us because we are now bringing you this podcast in association with SharePad from ShareScoop. This is something we've spoken about for a little while, ladies and gents, and we're absolutely thrilled to tell you all that we are here now under the sponsorship of SharePad from ShareScoop. We've arrived at this juncture because of you, the loyal listeners from around the UK and around the world that have taken Twin Peaks podcast to your hearts, and you've been listening and generating the numbers and the reach that we've got. So thank you ever so much, and thank you for the team at ShareScoop, SharePad, who've contacted us and got this on the go. So going forward, we're now going to be working alongside and with ShareScoop, SharePad. So thank you guys and ladies and gents for your support. Pete, how are you doing? How do you feel about all this?
Oh, mate, I'm good, and I've chopped the bits about the SharePad, ShareScoop tie-up. It's a real endorsement of what we've been doing and all the support we get. And thank you to everybody for all the listening, the subscribing and the retweeting and all the various comments. And it's fantastic. So thank you so much. And we look forward to taking it onto the new level.
Fantastic. I mean, one of the great things about what Pete and I have done and always sort of stuck to our guns is that we could have embraced some other entities. We could have gone down the route of talking and ramping stocks and all the rest of it, but we've stuck to our guns and said, no, we're not going to do any of that. And this is about using this platform to teach and enable other people to become better investors or better traders, depending on what they want to do. So, and that's what we're going to continue to do.
Occasionally. Oh yeah. I mean, that's totally our philosophy. And it's certainly been, you know, my own personal philosophy since starting Wheelie Dealer. You know, it wasn't to ramp in stocks and any of that silliness. It's to help people and you know, let's all work as a team and let's, you know, all do as best as we can, sort of thing. And it's all about education and learning new ways of doing things and seeing how other people approach things and just learning from one another and helping one another, really.
Absolutely. It's about building a community, and we're very, very honoured to have you guys and ladies as part of our community and for us to be part of your community. And it's brilliant to have listeners, and know we've got listeners around the UK, USA, Canada, America, Denmark, Belgium, France, Spain.
Don't forget Ukraine.
And of course, all our loyal listeners in the Ukraine. So thank you ever so much for continuing to support us. We really, really appreciate it. Now, Pete, we can't start this podcast without talking about the matter at hand.
The obvious.
The obvious issue at hand around the world, and that one of COVID-19. Where do you want to start with this today, mate?
Well, you know, it's the last podcast we did was, probably a couple of weeks ago. We tend to record them every 2 weeks or so. And I don't feel that much has massively changed from 2 weeks ago in terms of the virus. I mean, you know, it does look like the UK is past its peak in terms of, you know, the number of new cases and whatever. And there's more talk about coming out of the lockdown in stages and whatever. But it's still very early days, and there's not much clarity on when we're coming out. And you know, it's still muddling through and all bit of a mess, really.
I think this is the issue. We're seeing examples of Sweden. I think the virologist there has come out and said that he's made some mistakes and the numbers are climbing there. And now we've added, I think yesterday's numbers, all I've got so far, is we've added the numbers and included the numbers from the care home deaths. And that took the total to 26,097. and that led us to be, was it the second or the third highest in Europe, Pete, or in the world?
I'm not sure. Oh, I think it's the second highest in the world, isn't it? I mean, it's pretty ropey.
Yeah, so, you know, we're not through this yet. I don't know how long it's going to last. But what was concerning me was an FT report said that the total, potential total in the UK could be as high as 47,000, and not the 26 that's actually being reported. So that's quite concerning. But an interesting point, Pete, I saw a tweet from, and you remember this name, John Redwood. Sir John Redwood. He was a British Conservative Party politician and Member of Parliament for Wokingham, and formerly the Secretary of State for Wales and Prime Minister in the Prime Minister's Cabinet, John Major's Cabinet, and twice unsuccessful challenger for the leadership of the Conservative Party in the 90s. He came out and put a tweet out, Pete, and he said, the UK death numbers, this is about yesterday, are worrying but are often not comparable with other countries. They need to be adjusted for population size and for different recordings of deaths. However, if you look at what's been happening with regards to the numbers and our averages, or averages across, you know, various countries across Europe, what happens is you look at the average over the course of 12 months, and actually the peaks and the rises for that is quite significant, Pete. I'm not sure you've seen this from the FT, yeah?
No, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, but if you're looking at the average, and we're looking at April now, so we're going to the 29th, which is yesterday's date. For Austria, for instance, their deaths, excess deaths, are up 13% across their averages, yeah? Belgium's up 60%. Denmark's up 5%. England's up 52%. France.
So these are excess deaths over people who would normally die this time of year. Is that what you're saying?
Historical average deaths for April. Yeah. We are up 52% above the average, historical average.
Yeah.
France is up 34%. We knew how bad things were in Italy, for instance. That was excessive. That was plus 90% above their average.
Ooh, yeah.
Netherlands, plus 42%. Portugal, plus 10%. Spain, plus 72%. Sweden, plus 23%. Switzerland, plus 29%. And US, plus 7%, above their average. Yeah, that was up to the date of 29th. And Italy's was a subset of the country, was 90%. So, yeah. So, you know, you can look at different metrics, look at different this, that, and the other. Regardless of which way you want to cut this, the numbers are high for England, they're high for lots of countries across Europe. And we need to be mindful that we don't try and pacify people with this. It's a bad number, and the numbers need to be addressed, and we need to get people as safe as possible. And there's discussions being had about lockdown. How much should we do? At what stages should we do this? You know, and I don't think anyone has the right answer yet as to how it should be done.
No, that's a very good point. I get the impression. I mean, you look at somewhere like Sweden, they seem to have done remarkably well, and they didn't have a lockdown in the sense of making people stick at home. And what seems to have worked there is the social distancing, which is obviously a key part of what we're doing, and the washing hands. It's remarkable how much effect washing your hands seems to have. But I suppose it makes sense, because if you're going to touch surfaces where someone might have coughed onto or whatever, you know, it's then when you put it to your mouth that you've got a problem. So it sort of makes sense that washing hands is going to work. But what I find scary is just how people weren't washing their hands beforehand. But there you go.
Pete, you've seen it. I've seen it. Pubs, restaurants, you go into, you know, the WC, wherever you are. And you're there washing your hands. You see the person that's gone to wherever they've gone to, just walk straight out. You go, no! But they do it. They do it. It's maddening.
It's the peanuts on the bar syndrome, mate, isn't it? It's never eat the peanuts on the bar because you don't know whose fingers have been in it.
I remember that. I did used to always eat the peanuts on the bar, Pete, but thank you.
Once you've had a few, you forget, don't you? It's like when you're sober and you go, can you remember what a pub was? Can you remember going into a bar? they were really cool. They were like these places, right, where people used to meet together, and they'd be like, they used to serve alcohol. Can you believe that? Like a place that served alcohol, and you could have meals and everything. It was amazing. I used to love it, as in the old days.
It will be back, mate. You believe you me. I've been speaking to people this week, Pete, and the discussion about lockdown, no lockdown, or whatever. There are people I know, yeah, and probably you know as well. Yeah. The minute they say that, you know, watering hole is now open again. There were people.
Are you talking about me?
No. And there's other people as well that will, they'll be there in a heartbeat, Pete, because that's part of their social, you know, persona. To be in the pub, meet the pals and the mates down there, to be in that environment. It's not quite the same as buying X amount of tinnies and sitting in the house with your partner, your friends, your family.
On Zoom.
You want to be, or yeah, it's not the same, you know, virtual pub meets.
Yeah.
The interesting thing I found though, Pete, and I found this quite funny, well, it's not even funny really, but there is talk of, and they're calling it the Clash of the Titans. There's Elon Musk on one side, and Mark Zuckerberg. So Elon Musk, Tesla, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, right? And they've got completely different views on this lockdown thing. And you know how polarizing America is, full stop anyway, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So one of them is saying, you know, we've got to look at the measures of how to slow the spread of coronavirus down, yeah? And Zuckerberg's basically endorsing measures while Musk is saying, and he's condemning the lockdown as undemocratic. One of them runs a social media site, which obviously is getting probably more traffic now and all the rest of it in activity. One of them's trying to sell cars, right?
I did think that.
So you're not quite sure who's saying what and why. But Musk is always quite, you know, it can be quite inflammatory, can't he, with his language sometimes. What he's saying here is, it's fascist to say that people cannot leave their homes, right? This is not democratic. This is not freedom. Give people back their goddamn freedom. That's Musk, right? Zuckerberg comes out on the other hand and says on his earnings call, I worry that reopening certain places too quickly before infection rates have been reduced to very minimal levels will almost guarantee future outbreaks and worse longer-term health and economic outcomes. Who do you side with there?
It's so difficult. It's unproven whether lockdown was the right measure, but we are where we are and we're doing the lockdown. But it's pretty obvious that it gets to a point where the lockdown has to be eased and we have to get some sort of life back into our economy. We cannot just carry on with a lockdown forever. That's just obviously ridiculous. And it sort of gets to a point where the cure is doing more damage than the disease. And that, you know, it's how do you manage that point, basically?
It's a difficult one because already from stats that I saw, I think it was a couple of days ago in the FT, the US spends, you know, regardless of the fact that it's a lot of private healthcare over there,
yeah,
the US spends far more on healthcare than any other country. So $3.6 trillion a year, which is 17% of its GDP, Pete.
Yeah.
So if you've got a situation where your GDP in the next year and the next year after that is going to be shrinking by 15%, potentially 20%, that's
terrible.
A big hit to find to then keep paying that amount. Yeah.
Well, we're the same. I mean, I think the NHS is something like 11%, is it? Or
right.
something?
I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I think it's something. I mean, it's relatively low, but of course you don't have any profit involved is the theory. But even so, you know, paying for the NHS is impossible if you kill the economy. And this is where this difficult balancing act is.
Absolutely. I mean, the stats coming out from, I think it was this morning actually, France's GDP collapsed by 5.8%, right? That's the biggest decline in record. So, you know, their health system is going to be pushed.
And that's only for like the start of a lockdown, isn't it?
Not, that's Q1, like, including 2 months of it, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, where we are today, you know, European economies are probably down like 20% at the moment. If it's like a real time GDP, or probably worse, there's nothing. You know, there's nothing going on.
Yeah, and this is what I keep saying to people with regards to the markets. The markets have been fueled and financially engineered, and lots of stimulus coordinated by various countries. And the economy is suffering. It's going to suffer for 6 months, 9 months, maybe a year. I don't know. But the markets are going back to where they were or had been going up until this afternoon. Well, I think they were in September and October of last year, and GDP is going to be hit. So therefore, the stocks and the companies involved that gather that revenue for the GDP to be accounted for is going to be hit. It's going to impact those share prices. So be careful of where they're running to.
Yeah, I mean, it's so difficult to know what's going to happen, because I think it's almost like the problem is even bigger, in the sense that you've got the economic hit now, but you've also got this problem that governments are running up loads of debt. And how does that debt get dealt with in the future? Because obviously we can increase deficits perhaps to a small extent in the future, but it, you know, they were saying, well, there can't be any more cuts to public services. Well, if that's the case, you're only left with higher taxation. And of course, the problem with higher taxation or cuts to public services and with more debt on top is that you're just creating a zombie economy that will never grow. You know, we are becoming Japan. We're turning Japanese.
Yeah, and that's the difficulty, mate. You know, we are going to see, with regards to these loans and stimulus that's been given to various companies, eventually a significant number of increases in unemployment and job losses. Yeah. Today's numbers out of the US is saying,
oh, horrible. Yeah.
You know, another 3.8 million Americans are filing claims for joblessness. So that takes that figure to 30 million, Pete. Imagine, you know, if that was a number for the UK, that's half of the, you know, probably more than half of the working age people unemployed.
That's just shocking. Absolutely shocking. I mean, it comes back to this, you know, at what point does the cure become worse than the disease, in that we are stoking up so many problems now. What was it? I heard one earlier today. One I heard earlier today that I hadn't really thought of, which, you know, like care homes, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, a lot of those are run by private companies.
Indeed.
Well, those private companies are really struggling. And part of the reason they're struggling is because loads of their punters are dying. Yeah, you know, their customers, well, you know, the people who live in the care homes are dying. A lot of the problem is PPE is costing them a fortune to buy PPE, and they're getting no help. One of the problems they've had is that they've been ordering the the personal protection stuff, you know, for safety.
Yeah.
For the care workers and stuff. They've been ordering this stuff. It comes to the ports and whatever. It gets commandeered for the NHS. It's outrageous.
Yeah, that is very, 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 very true, mate. Just on that note, though, Pete, I'm not sure if you missed it. I think it was early this afternoon. The UK government confirmed it's going to cut taxes to reduce the cost of PPE. Yeah, so from tomorrow, the 1st of May, I'm not sure why it's taken them this long, yeah?
Yeah.
PPE purchased by care homes, businesses, charities and individuals will be free from VAT. And then it's only going to be for 3 months. So I'm not sure why they can't just say, look, until this is over with, we're not going to put VAT on that. You know, so zero VAT on PPE.
I imagine Rishi Sunak's got an eye on the numbers, and he's like, well, no, we can't do it any longer than 3 months. We just can't afford it. And yeah. Mm. It's such a mess. But coming back onto the market, so as we say, I mean, the economic outlook is dire. I mean, you know, I've never seen anything this bad. It is so horrible. And yet, markets continue to charge up. And the thing that is absolutely astonishing is that if you look at some pretty juicy long-term technical indicators, they are so bullish. And the particular ones that I'm obsessed by are the 13-21 day EMAs, the exponential moving average. They have all done bull crosses. I'm talking US indexes, European indexes, FTSE 100, FTSE 250. Everything has done bull crosses. That tends to mean weeks of gains. The other one that's particularly obsessing me is the monthly candlestick pattern. Yeah, but we're recording this on the 30th of the 4th, Thursday night. Yeah, so it's the last day of April. It's It's really significant because it means we have a full monthly candle for April. Yeah. You look at the candle pattern for the European indexes, you've got what is known as a bullish harami, two-month candles. And that is a pretty good signal that markets can rise. I mean, obviously, that's not guaranteed. It's probably like a 70% probability. But it's one of the most reliable candlestick signals there is. I mean, it's incredible. So many things are so bullish technically.
Yeah, and technically, Pete, I'd always agree with you on the technicals, but I think they're, my personal view is that they're founded on false foundations, mate. It's the question
totally.
Are we in a bear market or in a bull market with a correction? Where are we? Because it's so been artificially stimulated, Pete. You know, when we saw the numbers this afternoon came out from America. And the UK market gave up, what was it, 1.5%?
Yeah, but remember, the UK market, the FTSE 100, was massively skewed by Shell today, RDSB, because RDSB, RDSA cut its dividend. And when I just looked, Shell was down 11% today. Now, that is the biggest weighted stock in the FTSE 100 because it's an uneven weighting. And that is had a massive impact on the FTSE 100 today.
It has, and I completely agree with you, Pete, on that. I think the pension funds took a sharp intake of breath. I'm surprised that the market reacted that way, given what's happened. I mean, I think they were surprised that Royal Dutch Shell just didn't follow BP. But in saying that, Pete, and I've run some stats before on this, because I was speaking to somebody before, and I just pulled them up again. Royal Dutch Shell has been a pretty poor performer for the FTSE full stock for over 10 years. So if you're looking at total returns, people are buying Royal Dutch Shell for its income and for hopefully some capital gains, yeah?
Totally, yeah. Yeah?
Over 10 years, Pete, you're compounding Royal Dutch Shell, right? You're getting a total return of 3.27% of the... Yeah. And
yeah.
That's from stats I took out this afternoon before the market closed, so it might be a bit slightly less than that. Over 5 years, including dividend, you're compounding plus 0.81%. Yeah, over 3 years, you're getting minus 0.28%. What's the point of holding that stock for 3 years?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I hold it, and I've had a view for a while that I need to be reducing my exposure to it over time. The thing that's playing in my mind regarding Shell, I'm surprised by the dividend. I didn't think they would do that. I think it's taken real guts by the CEO to do that.
Agreed.
By the board. Because they haven't cut it since World War II, which is like, wow. Anyway, what was always playing on my mind was it's pretty obvious that electric vehicles are coming. At some point, there's a crossover, and it's how well can big oil companies, can any oil company manage this crossover between delivering oil and serving oil and petrol and stuff to customers and becoming more of a charging point electric and natural gas and whatever to customers? And I think that transition is going to be difficult for them.
I agree. I mean, they spent a shed load of money on the beginnings of that transition, and that this particular dividend being cut from 47 cents to 16 for this particular quarter. Do you know how much that's going to save them, Pete? This is just one quarter of dividends.
Go on.
2.5 billion.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's 2.5 billion that income seekers, you know, people that are dividend, you know, seeking dividend, and also pension funds are not getting. So that goes back to that conversation we were having a couple of weeks back about pensions and SIPs and all the rest of it being impacted by all these dividend cuts, you know.
Oh. I mean, it's interesting because you know that expression, never let a good crisis go to waste. And I think that's exactly where RDSB is. I think RDSB management have known their dividend's been a problem for years.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this is an opportunity to cut it and they've got a good excuse.
I think you could be right. I mean, the other stock that took a bit of a shellacking today was Lloyds, Pete. I'm not sure you saw the news coming out of that.
I heard a bit. What are they saying then?
I mean, it's essentially they're in a bad way. You know, the first quarter they've been absolutely smashed to pieces. So first quarter was entirely wiped out by the impact, or they're blaming it on coronavirus. Why not? You know what I mean? And it's the UK's largest retail bank. So announced a 420% increase, Pete, in provisions for bad loans.
Yeah, okay. So it's a lot of these, provisions. You know, like it's like they're putting money aside effectively. Absolutely. To cover future problems. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's deemed to be the bellwether of the British economy. Yeah. So if Lloyd is doing well and he's paying a dividend and blah blah blah, it's doing okay. So it reported a pre-tax profit of 74 million, Pete, down from 1.6 million pounds the previous year.
1.6 billion, down from 1.6 billion, yeah.
So 1.6 billion.
Yeah.
To 74 million.
Incredible.
That's some cut there, yeah?
A massive. But I mean.
And the other bit of it that people don't really go right into the minutiae of the details, Pete, yeah? Is that those results would have been even worse, yeah? So it would have made a loss, but it got or gained, or whichever way it got it or did its numbers, it got a tax credit of £406 million in the quarter. What would it have done with that? Without 406 million, it'd been -300 odd, wouldn't it? A loss.
Yeah.
You know, and I like my stats, Pete, because I always look at the total return, and this is one of the tips I'll give to anybody who's looking to research stocks. Have a look at how they performed over 3 years, 5 years, and 10 years. If you're an investor, you should be holding the stock for at least 3 years. Yeah, most probably more than five. Lloyd's has returned -15% over the past 3 years total returns. Wow. Over 5 years, -9%.
Over it's the been past, an absolute dog, isn't it?
Yeah, over the past 10 years, -3%. And this morning around 9:30, I got a beautiful phone call from a very good friend of mine. He runs a construction business, and he's had to furlough a lot of his staff, and he's been absolutely on my case for the past couple of weeks. I've been trying to do as mindfulness as possible with him, coach him, mentor him, just keep him in a really nice place until things open.
Yeah.
A couple of, it's got to be at least 9 months back, he was having a conversation with me. He was asking me about Lloyd's. Right, he's had the shares forever and a day, and he asked me what should I do about the Lloyd shares. And I basically just do as I always do. I don't give anyone advice. I just asked him lots and lots of questions about that, and asked him to look at certain things. Yeah, and at the time, the shares were around 60 pence. So let's say it was around December time, about 60 pence, Pete.
Yeah,
and he went away, and he came back to me before the New Year's, and he said, "Oh, by the way, you know that conversation we had about Lloyd shares?" I said, "Yeah, what about it?" He said, "I'm not sure to thank you yet, but we'll see what happens." He says, "I got rid of them."
Oh, brilliant.
I was like, "You what?" I said, "Oh, mate." I said, "Don't be putting that on me." I said, "I asked you some questions. You went away and decided what you wanted to do. This is on you, right?" He rang me up this morning. He said, "Have you seen the news on Lloyd?" I said, "Yeah, I've seen it." He says, "I think I owe you more than a pint." It's probably saved him about 300k, Pete.
Fantastic. That is fantastic.
Yeah. So the shares have literally halved from where they were in December. So he was jumping around his front room this morning saying, "I owe you a pint." I was like, "All right, mate, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it." You know, and then we get back into, I've got to, you know, I said, "Maybe you want to give that money to your team, to your staff, you know, once you go back to work." He was like, "I've already given enough, mate. I don't get nothing. I've had to look after my staff." So he's got staff that are furloughed. He's looking after them. But as a director, he's getting bugger all.
It's interesting when you look at a lot of the listed companies, loads of directors are actually doing the right thing and taking some pretty big cuts.
Yes.
But you know, okay, they're taking 50% off like several billion a year.
Oh,
so
of course.
Sorry, several million a year. So probably don't even notice it. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, fair play. At least they're doing it, which, you know, when you look at what happened back in the credit crunch when basically it was all pigs' noses in the troughs, and you get a sense that directors are much better behaved this time, which is sort of nice to see. So,
some of them absolutely are, Pete. I mean, that brings an interesting point. You would have known, and then you would have heard of the good old Bernie Sanders, Pete. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He was absolutely livid, mate, a couple of days ago, and he doesn't tweet that often unless it's about politics, right? and you know he's not running anymore. It's going to be Biden that's running against Trump.
Yeah, so he was potentially the Democratic candidate. He was like he was like the Corbyn of the US, wasn't he?
That's a bit unfair, Pete.
Ooh, bit harsh. What? Harsh on which one?
I'm not going to say it, but it was having trouble. So Bernie put out a tweet. I'm saying Bernie because we're mates, you know what I mean? Bernie Sanders put out a tweet on the 27th. Livid. It's not a word I use, folks, right? How the hell does Carnival, a cruise ship company that pays virtually no federal income tax, receive a bailout? But the Postal Service, the most popular government agency in America, does not. The post office is essential. Cruise ships are not. Yeah. There you go. The shares were down to about £6 in the UK, and now they're back to 12. They've had the bailout, then they've raised, had a placing, and they're back at 12 quid. There's already, talk of, the cruises going back online sometime next year. But we had this conversation before, Pete. Would you want to be getting back on a cruise ship and being in the tin can for a couple of weeks?
You know what? It is surreal because I caught, I think it was Ian King Live on Sky News, And it had the CEO or somebody like that of Carnival Cruises, CCL. And he was saying, got loads of bookings and things will go back to normal and people will be sailing cruises around the world. And I'm thinking, I have no way I would go on a cruise. It's just like, what? Bizarre, mate. I don't get it.
I don't get it either, mate. I don't get it either.
There's a lot of weird stuff going on in the world, isn't there? The world is just very, very weird at the moment. With Donald Trump telling us all to drink bleach or whatever we got.
I was trying not to go down that conversation at all, mate. We don't want to talk about last week. That was a surreal moment, Pete. The amount of GIFs and the amount of videos I saw, I even put one out myself where it panned to Dr. Burks, yeah? And it's just playing various different types of music.
Get
me out of this room. Because she's been a staunch advocate and champion of Trump.
I don't know how she does those press conferences.
And she's now, on that particular day, she was like, I can't believe he just said that.
Yeah.
And then the next day he's come out, I was being sarcastic. Mate, it went viral. You can't just say you were being sarcastic. And then, his team is saying to him essentially, mate, you know what? You've blown it here. If you carry on this like this, potentially you could lose the election. You might want to take a few days off and not do another talk to the press. And the next night, he wasn't out, was he? He didn't come out.
Yeah. I haven't seen him for a while. He seems to have sort of given up on the whole idea. It's bizarre.
Well, he'll be back, mate. He'll be back.
And the funny things with Trump is that if he tells a joke, he flags it. So it's like if he's being sarcastic, telling a joke, he'll flag it. So he'll say, now I've got the best joke ever for you. And he'll do it and he'll go, isn't that the brilliantest, bestest joke you've ever heard? And, he'll just go on about it forever. You know what I mean? So we know it definitely wasn't sarcastic at all. He meant it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny with the stocks, right? One thing I have noticed is that, yes, Lloyd's, all the banks, they're cyclicals. Banks always going to struggle in tough times and whatever. But one thing I have noticed is there are a few companies that are actually doing well. And it's amazing in so many ways, but there are companies that are actually doing really well out of this. And they're rare. There are some around.
Pete, I'm waiting for you to give me some examples, mate. Go for it.
Well, mate, I've got to give you the biggie, haven't I? I can't remember. I think this has come out since our last podcast. The obvious one is Boohoo. I hold Boo.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, stunning. Those results were just unreal. The backwards results before the virus problems were really strong, 40% gains on revenue and whatever. But even in the lockdown, they are growing really fast. It's remarkable. Very impressive.
The question I want to ask them, Pete, they're doing well. They're selling clothes mainly to women, right? I know they do Boohoo Man or whatever it's called, right?
Yeah, mainly women, yeah.
These people buying clothes, where are they going?
I think it's a couple of things. I think partly because lots of other websites and stuff were down. So they had a big advantage. They were the only game in town.
It does not answer my question, Pete. People buying clothes.
Oh, no.
And fashion. Where are they going? They're in their front room, or they're going to the local Morrison's, Sainsbury's, Marks and Spencer's to buy their essential shopping. What are they doing with all this kit that they're buying?
Well, mate, you've nailed it. They are, you know, going to Sainsbury's, whatever they're doing. But what they're also doing is they are photoing themselves with selfies in their new top. That's it. They're doing Zoom calls. You've got to have
nice
to do that, mate. That's that. I know it's nuts, but that's what it is. And I was talking to a friend about
it. Kidding me, honestly.
I was talking to a friend about it, and she said, and I think there's a difference again between people who have money and people who don't have money. It's a bit like lockdown has been a very different experience for a lot of people than it has for others. And so, for instance, yeah, my friend was saying, you know, she's a sucker for promotions. So
right, okay.
One of her favourite clothing websites will put out a voucher thing, you know, 40% off today. And she's on it and buying stuff, partly because she's bored, you know, and there's all that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I don't know what to say to that, Pete.
But I also think, you know, Boo seems to be a pretty well-run operation. And its marketing on things like social media and that is just so impressive.
Oh, they've always been winners on the marketing front, Pete.
Totally.
Yeah, I think until of late, they were probably only second, if not, you know, joint running up there with Fevertree. You know, they were marketing experts on the way that they ran their business.
And I think it's also the new brands. So, for instance, they've got Boohoo, which is the old one, obviously. They've got Pretty Little Thing, which has obviously, you know, has been growing well and whatever. But they've also got Nasty Gal, that's starting to pick up. They've got this thing called Miss Pap, which is a new one, and that seems to be off to a reasonable start. And, of course, they bought those other brands like Karen Millen. I can't remember what the other ones are called. But, you know, they've got potential for sort of older customers. So, yeah, Boo's interesting. I like that one. I hold it. I'm happy to hold it, you know.
I love the fact you know all these fashion names, Pete. You know, mainly women's fashion. I think that's pretty amazing, mate.
A man of fashion, you know that. But it's interesting. The other one, I hold, which is a bit slightly surreal, is Diversified Gas and Oil Company, DGOC.
Yeah, you mentioned that one before.
In these days of oil being given away, an interesting thing happening to them is that they're going to be listed on the main market.
Oh, okay.
So that's quite a nice development. So, you know, that's doing all right. I'm quite happy with that. Which other ones? There are others that do them, like things like IOMart I hold been doing well. We mentioned Spiron on the last call, I think, SPT, that's done well. But, you know, there are companies that are doing well and then a lot that aren't. Telecom Plus doing well.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of the ones that I've noticed that have had a really good 3 months, for instance, are the gambling websites and the spread betting websites. You've got, of course, you've got Plus 500. You've got IG Group and you've got CMC. Now, given the volatility in the markets and the fact that percentage-wise, far more people lose from spread betting, their revenues are going to be quite good regardless, I think, of the markets. And over the past 3 months, you've got Plus 500. That's up 39% over 3 months. Yeah?
What's the dividend on Plus now?
I haven't got a Scooby Pete on that. I can have a look.
Historically, it's had a pretty good dividend, like, say 4-5% or something. So it's not, you know, so it's nice on that. And the thing that's impressed me about that is that they just keep putting out, we're going to be ahead of expectations. And then a couple of weeks later, oh, you know, those revised expectations, we're going to be ahead of those. And it just seemed to be doing that all the time. It's remarkable.
I think the thing is, with these companies, people are trying to call the market up and down. And each day,
absolutely,
because of the volatility, people are getting caught out. You know, and this it's a trader's market if you can do the right thing. But if you're spread betting, it's leverage. So you're possibly going to get a margin call or you're going to get hit. You know, you blink and walk to the toilet and come back and the market's moved, which is what happened today. With regards to the yield on Plus 500, ticker symbol PLUS, 3.99% at the minute, which isn't bad.
Oh, okay, so it's gone down because the stock's done well and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's up 40%, Pete, in the last 3 months, which is pretty good going for, you know,
It's a funny one because it's Israeli listed, and it's, you know, there's been a lot of question marks over it in the past. It's one that I wouldn't want to put a lot of money into. It's quite risky, I think.
I don't know. I mean, people always question other people's governance until we see stuff going on in the UK and we go, what happened there?
Yeah.
We've seen NMC delist. We've seen Finnabar and that owns TravelX on the cusp of going out of business.
Oh, yeah.
And Plus is a $1.3 billion business. It doesn't mean that its governance is completely, you know, clean. I don't know. Could be super clean. I don't know. I don't know the business well enough.
No,
people always question companies that are listed elsewhere, not necessarily questions the ones that are listed here. And it happens to the ones that are UK listed and headquartered in the UK as well. IGP is £2.9 billion company.
Yeah.
And it's still paying a nice dividend of 5.6%.
Yeah. Well, I hold IGG, so I'm totally biased on that one. And it's got quite a chunk of cash as well.
Right, so that's up 14%.
And they're the market leader. They're class.
They're a long way market leader as well. They're up 14% over the past 3 months, so they've done really, really well.
Done all right.
And the other one in the middle there is CMC Markets. That's up 27% over the past 3 months. So that's done reasonably well as well. I'm just trying to see what size that one is. So, you know, you've got to be in niches which are going to do okay, which is why I keep banging on about AI and pharma, which we'll get onto in a minute.
Yeah.
So CMC is a tad smaller than the other two we mentioned. That's just shy of a £600 million company, but that only pays a tiny little dividend of 1.6 at the moment, and that's down 3%. But that's had a good run from the March lows. It was 135-ish, and more recently it hit 223. It's down at £2 today. So a lot of volatility still.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, you have IGG as the big solid one. CMCX is going to run up and down quite fast. Plus is the one that has a bit of regulatory risk around it, maybe. But, you know, you pay your money and take your choice, don't you?
Absolutely, mate. I mean,
what ones you got on the AI then, mate?
I go back to my, you know, and the one that I say is now a tech stock has come out with great news again today. AstraZeneca, Pete.
Oh, awesome! Yeah.
And the news out today was one of a collaboration with Oxford University, Pete. Did you see that landmark partnership?
About the vaccine stuff.
Absolutely. So they're saying essentially that they're doing really, really well with this vaccine. The potential for it is immense, and potentially they could get early results as early as June to July of this year. That puts them ahead of quite a lot of other companies and, you know, of their peers. So that could be absolute game changer, obviously, for the whole of the world, in a sense of we have a vaccine, and then AstraZeneca helps them to produce, manufacture and distribute that accordingly. And that would be a really good kudos for the UK government and the UK pharmaceutical industry as well. But it goes back to what I was saying to you before, that, you know, Oxford University, AstraZeneca and their partners, they're using AI, machine learning, quantum computing all of the time to try and crunch this stuff to get this done as quickly as possible. You know, and this morning, prior to the US market going belly up, AstraZeneca was up 5% and 86 quid, a new all-time record. You know, this.
Oh, it hit 86. I thought it was at 84, and I was pretty happy.
It hit 86. I think it closed at, I don't know where it closed, to be honest. I haven't looked. But this goes back to my argument about finding stocks that have got legs and longevity and, you know, returns. So if you're holding them for plus 3 years, 5 years, you want to be compounding that return in your portfolio. So over 10 years, the numbers I had earlier today, AstraZeneca was returning to, over 10 years, Pete, 13.3% compounded.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. Over 5 years, 15.7. Last 3 years have been phenomenal for it because everyone's recognising the pipeline finally. 24% compounded, Pete. So we're using the rule of 72. Yeah. Last 3 years, whatever you had invested in AstraZeneca, you had 10 grand invested in AstraZeneca. You now got 20 grand.
Just incredible, isn't it?
If you've reinvested your dividend.
Yeah. Beautiful. So I mean, it's the classic thing that shows how if you buy quality, take a long-term view and run your winners, don't keep chopping out in and out of it, you know, you can make good money very easily.
I completely agree with you, mate. The other one using AI and
I say very easily. That's a little bit flippant.
Well, yeah, it could be
relatively easy.
It could be easier, should we say?
I wish it was.
I mean, I got a bit of a bonus today as well, Pete. I mentioned ICMA before. Obviously, I was one of the stocks I bought in right in the middle of all the declines. So I bought
Pharmaceuticals,
yeah.
Is that HIK, I think, isn't it?
HIK, yeah. So yeah. It's a pharma biotech. They do lots of generics. And in the pain management, respiratory, COPD, biopharma sort of space. But they're getting a lot of demand for their COVID-related respiratory pain, anaesthetics, sedatives, antivirals in that space.
Cool.
And so I bought it at £17.63 on the 17th of March when the markets were completely getting shellacked. Yeah. And they did okay. And I took some off when it was up 35%.
Nice.
At £23.81, which is only last week. So from 17th of March to 24th, I've got 35%, took some off the table and was waiting to see how the markets behaved. This morning, they came out with a trading update saying everything's going really well. Global injectables are performing well. US and Europe seeing increased demand for business related to COVID. And subject to the AGM, which is happening today, they were going to pay their dividend, Pete. Yeah. So that was going to be 23 pence per share. And for the total for the year, obviously I've not held it for the year, that would give a dividend up 16%. This afternoon, they confirmed, yes, we're going to pay the dividend. Happy days.
Excellent. So I mean, it comes back to what we were saying, that, you know, there are loads of companies absolutely in dire straits out there, and it's a terrible situation. You know, the airlines and stuff like that is so sad. It's just appalling. But there are companies that are doing really well.
Yeah, I mean, the airlines, Pete, I've got really grave concerns about the airlines industry. And they're going to need a bailout all by themselves, the way things are looking.
Yeah.
You know, you've had, who was it? Boeing. Did you hear the news about Boeing?
No, what they said.
So Boeing are basically saying, really, really sorry, we're in bad shape.
Yeah.
We're going to cut 10% of our workforce, Pete. Yeah. So that's a US employer, but obviously they've got bits and pieces all around the world. Yeah.
It's the leading plane manufacturer.
It's the number one, Pete.
Yeah.
150,000 people worldwide, right? 10% of that. Could be gone, yeah. And that is on top of BA saying it's going to cut 12,000 jobs.
Well, BA was saying today, so that's IAG, isn't it? International Airlines Group. They were saying they might not even keep operating out of Gatwick. Shocking.
That is absolutely shocking, mate. So yeah, so all of them are under pressure. Airbus the same. You know, they're all reporting losses, Pete. And you know, when you get a shutdown, you cannot fly, or there's, you know, your capacity is, or what you're using is down to 10%. You know, the other thing as well, Pete, going back to the travel industry, is that there looks like there's going to be a massive wave of litigation because a lot of the travel companies haven't been paying their refunds. So
they're trying to give vouchers.
They
don't want to give the cash because they need it.
They
obviously
haven't got the cash to give.
Yeah. But EU law is that they have to give cash. So.
There you go. So they're saying, oh, have a ticket for 2021, have a ticket for 2022. People are going, actually, I need that money. You know, my circumstances have changed, so therefore I need that money now. Can I have the money, please? And they've been putting it off and asking for this and asking for that. A friend of mine is going through the same situation. He was meant to be going to Barbados with his family to see his other part of his family down there.
Yeah,
and he couldn't get his money and still hasn't got his money yet, and he's trying to sort that out.
It's terrible, it really is. But it's bad all round. I mean, it's just so much of it. I mean, it's And this is one thing that's bizarre with the markets doing so well. But like we said, I think a lot of it with the markets is quantitative easing. And, you know, there is no alternative. It's the Tina trade. You can't, you know, bonds are a waste of time now. Cash is a waste of time. You know, property's not where you want to be either. You know, stocks are the only game in town.
It's a difficult one. I think we've had this conversation before, Pete, and my concern with the property side of it is that depending on how long this goes on...
And problems are, there, I mean... It's,
yeah, people are furloughed and all the rest of it. Yeah. There was something out a couple of days back, and then I saw something else. I think it was today, actually. It was basically saying that the larger builders, you know, Persimmons and Co and blah, 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 they're returning back and they're opening up their sites from the 1st of May, yeah? Or Monday, depending on which ones they want to do. So Bellway have joined in, Redrow have joined in, Persimmon and others are all going to be opening up slowly and going to make sure that workers can, you know, work with social distancing and blah, 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 blah. Great news, fantastic. You know, it's a massive revenue generator for the UK government and for the country and for the economy, yeah? Of note of all of this, Pete, is that they are now turning away and pulling out of deals to buy land.
Yeah, incredible.
So that tells you how much they're worried about going forward, because there's going to be, if they're building houses, yes, they'll put them on sale in 3 months, 6 months' time. They'll open the mortgages window again so people can move and all the rest of it when this lockdown's finished. It's a backlog of about, I think it was 4 billion last time I looked, of deals that were meant to be going ahead but are now been put on hold, Pete.
Yeah, because
they were saying, look, no, you can't move. Lockdown's in place. We can't close that deal. Okay, fine. So there's a backlog of that. Some of those may not go ahead. What these companies are saying by saying we're going to pull out of this deal to buy land is that they've got enough land on the books, and they're also worried that if this situation continues for longer, potentially there'll be a glut of houses with people who can't afford to pay their mortgage handing back in their keys.
Yeah, repossessions and stuff.
That could start again in 21, 22. I hope not, because, you know, we know everybody. We know loads of people that bought houses in the last 2 or 3, 4 years. I moved to my house, you know, 4 years next month, I would have moved to this house.
Yeah.
You know, so it's concerning developments, really, because that those are the sort of red flags that people are not looking at. And I'm looking so far out sometimes. People on Twitter are saying, you got it wrong. I'm getting tweets almost every other day. Every time the market goes up, I'm getting tweets from a particular person saying, you're wrong. I'm going, okay. But it's not about being wrong for a day or a week. It's about looking at the big picture of the long term.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's clearly a very difficult outlook. And, and we need the lockdown to be eased, but we're in this bind where, you know, we can't ease it quickly. And it's such a difficult situation to be in. Mate, I'm aware of the time, but we probably need to draw it to a close, don't we?
We're going to carry on, because I found a little twist which enables us to elongate our podcast. So we've got a couple more minutes, mate. I want you to touch on a couple of stocks, if I may.
Yeah.
And some of these...
I'll let you whistle through them, sir.
I'll whistle through a couple that people have been... some have been, I would say, been pushed a little bit. Some of them have come up with a little bit of news, and some of them are just, you know, scary. What's going on?
Yeah.
So one of them, Pete, that you would have seen had a lot of tweets of late, and there's a person that we know who actually owns this stock, Avacta Group, AVCT.
Oh yeah.
So that's up. The past 3 months, over 200, at one stage, 300%.
So that's a vaccine story, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's a COVID-related story that's been going around. And it's using their Afirma technology and novel engineered alternative to antibodies. So they've had a really, really good push. And they're looking at the COVID-19 rapid tests and so on and so forth. So it's one of those test kits sort of stocks.
Yeah,
but you know, this is my concern with these stocks is that the vast majority of them are loss making, but the because of the it's COVID one and it's everyone's rushing in for the fear of missing out. It's now a £204 million company,
and it's loss making. And the trouble is, there's no guarantees that they're going to be the winner. I mean, you know, if all these AIM companies are winners, I mean, that's ridiculous. It's not going to happen. you know, very few of them will in fact be the winners. So there's going to be a lot of disappointed people.
Potentially. I mean, this is all early stage stuff, but sometimes some of these early stage ones will actually deliver. You know,
You
know, and good luck to the people that got in early. The other one was, and that's been pushed a little bit as well and done reasonably well, another COVID play, Omega Diagnostics, ODX. And that's now a £82 million company. And that's up, at one stage, was up 300% as well. In the space of the past 3 months. In fact, in the past month, it's probably gone up that much as well. And so that's another one, another loss-making company that's on that sort of medical diagnostic sort of route. So there's a few out there. And I think the thing is with people, if you're a trader and you're reading all the different things that's going on and you see the news early enough or you researched it in depth, there's opportunity for you to get carried on a wave,
ride the
momentum. But as Pete says, you know, Pete and I have been invested in AstraZeneca for a long, long time. You know, it's a proven behemoth delivering profits. Some of these companies will go on a wave, maybe not get to the point of profitability, and then recoil in horror, and you'll be left there in a stock that's rapidly decreasing. We don't know whether that's going to happen with either of those two stocks, but I just wanted to point it out to people because that's moved, those two stocks have moved significantly over the past couple of weeks.
The thing I find really worrying with stocks like that is when you get people, they put all of their portfolio in it. They bet their house on it. They bet that, you know, and it's just madness. You know, it's fine to invest in stuff like that as part of your portfolio, as a controlled, you know, risk control part of your portfolio, but to put all of your money in it is just absolute insanity, basically.
Yeah, I would go along with that. I would go along with that, Pete. And do the stock on AIM that's done okay this week, in a shorter time frame, is that company that I used to have back in the day, Pete? Good old Burford.
Oh yeah, BUR. Yeah.
A litigation company that, you know, invariably got or is could it end up being litigated itself. That's up 42% this week alone on some good news regarding their cases. But you've got to remember this stock was nearer to £21 at one stage when I was holding it and has subsequently gone as low as nearly £3 and it's now back at £5. So those that are trading it, that nipped
could
in.
Could still recently, be interesting, yeah.
Yeah, that nipped in and got in sub £4. Very, very, very well done. I was speaking to somebody on DMs the other night, and I was saying it's probably likely to be a stock that I'll never ever revisit, you know, because the whole point of it was uncorrelated. The whole point of it that it was lawyers and they were going to be squeaky clean. That's been tarnished for me, you know. So at some point, it probably become a £21 stock again. I'll go, all right, fair enough. It doesn't that actually won't bother me. I'll find my rewards elsewhere, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. So are you holding Burr?
No, I sold it, Pete.
Yeah. So you're not banking it.
I got out of it last August when Muddy Waters even mentioned that he was going after some litigation companies. I got out, and that's where I made a change.
So would you be tempted back in then, do you think, or
never,
what?
Never.
I tend to stay,
once a company gets tainted for whatever reason, I tend to stay away from it because I want to invest and be able to sleep at night and not wake up tomorrow and find out it's down 50%. When I trade stocks, I know the risks that I'm taking. I don't want to trade Burford.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So what else have you got, fella?
Mate, I think I'm pretty much done at this end, really. We covered a few topics there and fantastic news about SharePad and stuff, so I'm well pleased about that. And we battled on, I think, is the point, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I want to do what I did on the last podcast and give a shout out for all our key workers out there. I think I made the mistake, and being a former firefighter, I should have said firefighters, because we have had for some time female in the fire service. So social workers, youth workers, bin men, teachers that are doing the online e-learning for our young people and educators and everybody that's out there that's doing lots of charitable and goodwill, you know.
Also the essential workers like the supermarket people and the, you know, the checkout boys and girls and the lorry drivers and that. Yeah, there's loads of people working really hard, where lots of other people who are like sat up with their feet on the sofa playing around with Facebook all day or whatever.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the thing for me, Pete, that I would ask everyone who's able to do is just have a little think around where you live, within 100 yards of where you live, of the people that you know, the elderly that you know, that are completely isolated. And next time you're walking or going for a walk or driving by, just stick a note out through the door and say, look, this is X from number blah, blah, blah. I haven't seen you moving around, or I haven't seen you, you know, do you need anything? I'm quite happy to go to the shop for you. Just put a list outside the door, and when I come back, you can give me the money when I come back.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're living in a block of flats, you can do it in a block of flats and just leave a note. You know, if you've got loads of books, just say, look, I've got loads of books here. If you're fed up of watching, there's nothing on the TV. I've got books here. Is there anything that you like? I've got some old puzzles and jigsaws. Just be as community-minded as you possibly can, and think about the people around you that you could support and give a little bit of kindness to. That's all I would ask. I mean, I've been doing it for years, and I'm doing it now. And my wife does it, and even my daughter does it. It's about thinking about other people and doing the best you can for the people that are out there that have got less, you know, or are just isolated. Because I've said this before, one of the biggest problems we've got in the UK, even this was prior to COVID, is loneliness.
Yeah, it's rampant. Yeah, absolutely.
So just be thoughtful of the other people out there, guys.
Dead right.
Ladies, gents. Sorry, Trevor, I'm not having a rant. I'm just asking you all to just think about others a bit more, if we possibly can. Yeah?
Yeah, dead right. Okay, sir, we've got to call it a day there, mate.
We're going to call it a day. Thank you all for listening. This is obviously our first podcast with ShareScope, with SharePad. Thank you ever so much, SharePad, for coming on board with us and for supporting us. Thank you all, wherever you are in the world, for listening to us. Thank you all for subscribing. If you haven't subscribed yet and you're enjoying this, please subscribe. You can find Peter Wheely on Twitter at Wheely Dealer on Twitter, and myself, Peter Higgins, at Conkers Numerical 3 on Twitter. That's us. Finished for today. We'll catch up with you all soon. Please take care of yourselves. Stay healthy. Stay safe. Stay at home. Only go out for essential stuff. And don't go speeding down the M1 like some people have done at 154 miles an hour. Okay? All right.
All right, mate. Gotta go. I'll speak to you later.
Take care.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye, folks. Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.